by the baby. And I was just so broken up. I had pains a lot. I could hardly walk. And the baby had a blue breast, black and blue breast. And I called the doctor right away. And he lanced it.
It was caked, huh?
He lanced it. It was, I don't know what he called it.
A caked breast. Oh, that's
I don't know. It was all black and blue. The doctor thought just lanced it, newborn baby. I don't know if you give him a check or something, it's $55 he's got to pay them. Or they're going to go and she's babies.
They should have paid you for being a guinea pig.
And you couldn't do nothing. I went to see a lawyer, you couldn't do nothing. I was so sick, and then the doctor, Dr. Brent, said that I had appendicitis. I had such a pain, so I don't know my stomach all over. The doctor said I had appendicitis. So, then I was getting ready to go for an operation for appendicitis. And then I got pregnant again, so the doctor said that unless it's an emergency, otherwise she wouldn't have to be operated. But there in Wilma, I had a house, at a nice place, and I was renting out the upstairs. So I was getting most of the money out from the upstairs to pay for the place.
Oh.
You know, I had a garden in the back,
mm-hmm.
and I and my sister, I used to tie up the tree, and I worked in the garden, planting potatoes and all kinds of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Con decided he's going to go to Montana. So I went to Montana, and I wasn't going to go there. And I asked Mrs. Rifkin, what can I do about it? I can't go to work. Little baby, nice and baby, what can I do? Oh, and he said, send me letters. How wonderful it is up there. He's getting along nice. I'm going to have everything in the world. I'm going to have everything. And he, but to myself, where can I go with a little nice and baby? Sister was a year and a half, and baby was.
The other baby was born by now.
Yeah, I know.
The second one.
Yeah, I know. And you know, he was so happy, you know. When Aimee was born, he went and he bought me a diamond ring.
Oh.
And he brings me a diamond ring. And then they start sending in the bills, he don't pay for it. He bought it by the bank and he don't pay for it. And I could get a pass, you know, to come between Wilma and St. Paul. I got a pass and I went down to the Capital Jewelry Company and I said, excuse me, here is your diamond ring. He cannot pay for it and I haven't got the money to pay for it, so here, please take it back. You know, he bought for me a watch in the Capital Jewelry Company. It was on 7th and Jackson Street. He didn't pay for it. And I had to work and pay for the watch. So I didn't want to have any more. Then he went to work and he brings four rooms of new furniture.
Oh.
And when Raymond comes from the furniture, I say, take it back. I don't want a furniture. I say, if I have money to buy a table, I'll buy a table. And if I have money to buy a chair, I'll buy a chair to sit on. But I don't want a new furniture when I cannot pay when I haven't got the money. So take it back. I don't want it. Well, later on he did buy some furniture. And then he goes away to Montana. The furniture wasn't paid for. Well, they was gonna take it into the store. Well, it was part paid already, you know. And they was gonna take it in the store to credit, but I know they'll never get back. So and he said it'll be free for him to send it by freight. There.
Mm-hmm.
He said the company pays them back. When mm-hmm. they move their furniture, they give. So I bought over here in St. Paul a Singer sewing machine. I paid $55 for it. And it came there with us in Montana there. And we lived in a little house. And it was the same thing over again. He didn't bring the money in the house. I didn't have nothing for the children. I didn't have nothing for myself. So I went around looking for a job and I found out that the women are working in the roundhouse. I went to the roundhouse and I got a job to work on an engine. At that time I did not have any shoes. My shoes were torn, my toes was taken out. I had no money to buy a pair of shoes. And two fellows that was running the grocery store, one of them was working in the roundhouse, Mr. Cohn, in a Italian guy at a big grocery store close by. So I told him that I hadn't got my groceries and I just started working for the Great Northern. And I have to work until I don't know if I paid once a month or 2 weeks, I don't remember. And I get a check and pay him, so they charged for me the groceries. So I bought groceries, and I had the girl who was taking care of the kids. And I went to work on the Great Northern.
You go home and nurse the baby?
Yeah, I went and nursed the baby. It was not far from the roundhouse, though, where I was working, where I was living. And one day, one girl had, she was a down. See, when I moved out from his place, I left half of the furniture to him and half of the furniture I took for myself. It was 4 rooms furniture. I left two rooms for him and I kept 2 rooms for myself. And I moved out in a little house and was closed by the roundhouse. And I worked till 4 o'clock and I come home and I find my 2 little babies on the street and it was cold and fall. What happened? The girl came over and she says, Cohn came in and took the furniture. I said, what do you mean? Why didn't she go over and tell me about it? He had no right to take it out. She says, he told me it was his. Now that girl was a dagger and dumb. Took away my sewing machine. I paid cash. I paid up to you on St. Paul $5 for the sewing machine.
And put the babies out in the street?
And left the babies on the street.
Oh.
The 2 babies was on the street in the cold. There was nothing in the house. And took my groceries away. That they wasn't even paid for.
Oh.
Took my groceries away.
What a terrible.
So there I was left to talk to the girl whether she said down, but she could have come over to the roundhouse. It was so close by. And tell me about it and I come over. He wasn't there. I chased those guys out. He talked, I don't know, 2 or 4 guys there, taking everything out to leave my babies on the street. So I went around in the neighborhood and it was such a nice people there in Ada. They rented me a house in the back of this people's house and it was all furniture on the stove and everything. And I moved in there with my little babies and I got another girl. He took care of my kids and I went back to work. And he'll come all the time. Where did I live? No, I think from that place I moved in the boxcar. From that place I moved in the boxcar. The Great Northern had boxcars there.
Mm.
And there was families living in there. I lived in the boxcar. No, I lived it later. Later it was in the boxcar. These people rented me the house and I didn't have the money to pay for the rent. So I gave him my watch, I gave him my lavalier, I gave him away all my jewelry, I told him until I paid the rent. And he used to come all the time and stick his head through the window and call me names and come in my house and steal the children.
Mr. Cohn, you mean?
Yeah. He'd take him down to the hotel. And you see, after 8 hours, they can call him to work. So, I couldn't find the kids a couple of times. I couldn't find the kids. One time I came home from work and the kids was gone. Well, even when I was home, when I had my baby in my arms and he came and grabbed the baby, what can we do? Tear the baby to pieces when he grabs them and tears them?
Hmm.
So I took the 2 babies and, you know, sister remembered that. The girl remembered that.
Yeah.
And they lived in the box. So he threw her out through the window and he grabbed the baby from me and took the 2 babies and went away to the hotel. And he takes him to the restaurant to eat. And after 8 hours, they called him to work. And the 2 babies was locked up in the hotel.
Mm.
So I had a neighbor lady, you know, a colored woman, Mrs. Elliott. And she was the best friend I had there. There was Jewish families that didn't want to have nothing to do with me or him. He used to gamble in their house. They wouldn't let me do. And Mrs. Elliott, she stood with me and she helped me. So she had a gun, a 22, China, new one. She said, you take this gun. And when he stick his head through the window, you just give it to him. So I had this gun in my saddle pocket, you know, inside of my pocket. And I come out of the hotel and I say, I want my babies. And she says, well, Con went away, you locked the room. I say, you unlocked that room and I want my babies. But they was both crying, the door was locked. Yeah. So I shut up that gun. I say, you open up the door and let me get my baby, so I'm using that gun. It was a 22 or 32. Hmm. She opened the door, and I come in that room, and I'm is laying on the bed. You know, he was about 9 months, 10 months old, the baby. And the daughter was standing there, and they was both crying, hungry. And I took the baby in my arms, and took the little girl. And I walked out, I don't know if I called a cab or something, and I brought him home. And the baby had a diaper on. It was full of soil in there. And the kid, his legs and all around, was so red. It was just raw, full of blisters. And I took him home and I washed him, and it was pretty hard to wash him, you know. I washed him and put oil on and put cornstarch on and I tried to heal it up. And I had a good time for them. I had everything they need to eat. I had clothes, I had everything. I used to come and steal the babies like that all the time.
Did he really want them or he just wanted to hurt you?
No, he just wanted to bother me, what did he care? For 20 years he never write any letters to the kids or to me. After I got divorced from them. Mm. Never wanted to know if they live or they're dead.
He just wanted to bother you.
He just wanted to make me trouble. And then when I sued for divorce, he wanted I should take him back. And I wouldn't take him back. I say anything when I throw something out, I examine pretty well, and if I can't use that, throw it out, I never take it back. And he wanted me to take him back, and I wouldn't take him back. So that's all the trouble he made for me. Well, once he stole them, and I couldn't find him. You know the little girl, she can still remember. He took him over to house, the woman, and I couldn't find him. And I went to the police, and the police was tired of him because I always had to call the police, they always steal the kids. And they were sick and tired of him. And once when he came in from the road, and they got him there by the train, and they put him in jail. So he was suing the chief of police.
Oh.
He was suing the chief of police for false arrest. So they didn't want to bother with him anymore. They wouldn't have nothing to do with him. So finally at that time, I couldn't find the kids because the police didn't want to help me. I couldn't find the kids. And there I took him someplace to some kind of a family. And my little girl, she can still remember, punished the kid, the woman, put her on the bed and turned the water on, and let the water on her now. And she was screaming, let the water on her now. Mm-hmm. She can still remember that, the kid. Mm-hmm. And just because he wanted to make me trouble, that's why he didn't care for the kids. So I went to the mayor, I went to the governor. To get my kids. Then they had him arrested, and I told him that I'm suing for divorce, and until I get my divorce and I cannot stay home, I gotta work to make a living for the children. I would have the state have him until I get through with him. So then there was a time they took the kids down to the state orphan home, Twin Bridges. You know, I can go there a certain time, yeah, I had to go through quite a ways, you know, to the kids, to see the children. And I was supposed to pay so much a month, and he was supposed to pay so much money. So he skipped, he went someplace, he went away,
mm-hmm.
and didn't come back. And I was swimming for the walls, and he wasn't around. so.
So you came back here?
So then I came back here. I was going to go back to New York. I decided to go back to New York. I wasn't going to stay in a place. I was going to go back to New York with the kids. Well, I could get a pass and go, but I went to court 4 times, and they wouldn't give me my children back.
Oh.
I went to court 4 times, and at the lawyer, they wouldn't give me my children back. And the court said, who is going to make her own choice is going to take the children. He came and told me he's going to get married. And who's going to get married to make a home and take the children out? On the way to the children, I stopped in Butte, Montana. There's a lot of Jewish families there.
Where were they? Where was the...
The children had to go through Butte. The twin bridges. I had to go through Butte.
Mm.
They stay over there before I can go to Twin Rivers to the kids. They all stay to Arkansas. So I came in there and some people, you know, they got these pawn shops, these stores, and I told them about my troubles. My 2 little children, where they are. And if somebody, if one of us don't make a home and take the kids home, they keep them for adoption. And I don't want to lose my little babies. So this woman I was talking to, so she recommended me a fella. There was a fella that is at a pawn shop. And you know, he was so filthy. His pants, if he bend them, they'll break. He was such a kind of filth. He just smelled. And this woman telling this man my story that I have to get married and I'll take my little children out from there. To Arkansas. So he says, children? He wouldn't support nobody's children. And I don't think I would want any man like that around me, anyhow. Boy, what a filth, he stinks. And then she recommended me another fellow, and he said he wasn't going to support somebody's children. Then Baby M came. He was working on the Great Northern. I don't know, I don't remember now how I got acquainted with him. I just don't remember. But he came, and he was so good to my children, he always put them in his lap. He always bring a bag full of fruit for the kids. And he loved them so much. And he was so good. And he wants to marry me, and he wants to take care of my children. And, I wasn't so very much in love with him. I thought to take my kids out. I'm able to take my children out from where they was. So I married them, just a piece there. We took the kids home, and we lived upstairs from the section house in Box Elder, Montana. He was working on the section gang. And you know, he wouldn't give me a red cent for to live on. The money that I earned for the Great Northern, it was invested in war bonds, in war stamps. And I didn't have any money. And he wouldn't give me 1 red cent to live on. I could go to the grocery store and get some groceries. We had a cow and we had chickens. I love to raise chickens. I just love these little chickens to raise them. I raise chickens. And when I take over, I have a case eggs to the grocery store, and I had left over 5 pounds of butter that I churned, that I took care of the cow, and I took care of the chickens and everything. I take it out to the grocery store, and they give me groceries, I take it all in a little bag. And they wouldn't give me 1 red cent in cash. And then I got pregnant, and see, we had no phone, I lived upstairs from the section house. And the foreman was living downstairs, and they could hardly talk English. This was Japanese people, could hardly talk English. But it was wonderful, nice people though. So I told them I have to have a woman to stay with me, because if I get sick during the night, if I get sick any time, I'll be here all alone, never take care of me. The baby liable to be born any time, so eventually got a woman. So the woman stayed with us, and she was a nice lady, and she was waiting, you know, until the baby was born. So one day he came home and asked about the lady was about, almost 2 weeks the lady was there, and the baby wasn't born yet. So he went to work and he says, you tell that woman to go home. So I said, I didn't hire her, you hire her. Why should I tell her to go home? Besides, if I'll be left all alone here. And he wouldn't buy anything for the baby, you know, like diapers or anything, wouldn't buy nothing. He never gave me a red cent to live on, nothing. And I couldn't get to my size shoes there, I didn't have no shoes. Couldn't get any shoes for the kids neither.
Well, did he change after you got married? I mean,
The day we got married, he got sore at me. The day we got married, the same day, he got sore at me, and I left him on the street and I went home by myself. Then he came back and started talking so nice, and I took it back. So I didn't want to send the lady back, so he comes over and he grabs me like that. And he was going to beat up on me. And that lady, she came over and she says, say, don't you do that. I'm going to beat the very diggings out of you if you do that. I say to the, she says to the missus, do you know what you're trying to do? And she grabbed him. And she chased him in the corner. And she says to me, say, I wouldn't live with that man if he was the only man on earth. She says, I'd go away and I'd take care of my kids and I wouldn't have him around. He says, I wouldn't stay here, and I don't think that you should. He's not a man, he's a beast. If you're going to beat it up on you, she says, in that condition, you know what it can happen? The baby could be born a cripple. So, after the woman packed her suitcase and left, then he got so good, he went in and buy diapers, and then he buy new clothes for the kids, and he got so good. And then there was one doctor, and the doctor used to get drunk, you know, from that flu. It was one doctor for a long space, you know. And he used to be, had to be up day and night. There was no doctor to take care of the people. People was falling like straw during the epidemic of the flu, after the First World War. And this doctor used to be drunk, and he fell on the street. So I went and I see the doctor, and I told him, I'm expecting at a certain time, and I want you to be ready when I'm expecting my baby. He was good at that. He was good at that. He was trying to keep sober. And he kept sober. He took the baby. And the baby was born a girl. He says, doctor, throw her out through the window.
He said?
Yeah. He didn't want a girl. Throw her out through the window, he says. And so I stayed there with him, and then as soon as the baby got a little bigger, yes, when the baby was, when I left him there, and I left the chickens, and I left the cow, and I left everything. Came to Chicago, and a little baby in the buggy, and my 2 kids, and I ran around to look for a room, and nobody wanted to let me in the house. Some people was nice enough, and they come to the door, they see me with the baby, and they say, we haven't got no room for a family. I got one little teeny room for a man to come and sleep over and go to work in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But they ain't got no room for a family. So I slept in the hotel, and I paid $4 for a bed one night, and I decided to come back to St. Paul. I had return tickets, you know, from there to Chicago and back.
Mm-hmm.
I came to St. Paul, and I went on Canada Street in Grove, and the lady rented me a room downstairs in the back of our house, furnished and everything, and it was real nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I was left in St. Paul. I couldn't go to New York. I sent her money, and it would take some time before I can get my money, you know.
Do you have it in the bank there or something?
I had it invested in war bonds
oh.
and war stamps. and I had to get it through the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it, and then I went and bought for myself a rooming house to make a living for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
190 stands, so it wasn't the building I bought, just the furniture and the business.
Mm-hmm.
I had to make a living in a rooming house, some living.
Mm-hmm. And the only thing you could do with a baby, three kids.
Yeah, the only thing I could do. Then Gus Barker, that's the one that lives in Chicago. Then he came back, and he still don't give me a red cent to live on.
Oh, he took him back again?
He came back here. He came back here, yeah, to stay with us. and he still don't give me a red cent to live on. He don't give me any money. And he always come back and he talks nice, you know, he's going to do this and that. But I didn't go to work. I had no money in the bank. And he takes me money, he takes me a dollar for a car, he's going to look for a job, and he goes out with his friends. He didn't look for no jobs. He sit in the pool hall, drinking coffee and playing cards and taking care of his friends, and didn't do nothing. Until my money was almost gone, I got nothing left there. Then I asked my landlord, such a wonderful landlord, and Mr. Brock, he owned the building, he had a couple of buildings there. And he was a mason, and I asked him if it's possible if he could get a job for him. He said, yes, he can. He went out to the Great Northern, and then he called me up and told me to send him down there, and he got him the job in the Great Northern, in the boiler room, firing the boilers, turn the boiler. And he got that job. He was working there. So he used to come home to eat. He didn't bring any money. And I had, see downstairs I had a large living room, and I had a couple of girls there in the living room. He come home, he eat his supper, he's sitting in the living room, and talking and giggling with these girls. He don't bring nothing, no money, he didn't bring anything in. So finally, in spring, he went back to Montana. He didn't send me no money. So I went to see the attorney, and he sent there, he says they can have an arrest and bring him back here. He said, you have to support the family. I'll come back here and take care of the family. And there I was pregnant. And I had a rooming house, 190 East 10th Street, at three floors. And I had Sam Wolf was living in my place. He was a Jewish fellow, and Scotty, the Scotsman, was living there. So I rented out then when I was expecting, and the landlord came and he saw me in that condition. He says, what are you going to do? The baby's born. So I said, well, if I die at home, I said, I wouldn't go to no city hospital. So he says, I'll see what I can do for you. And he ran away and he sent a lady for me from the Mason's Lodge. And the lady came and she says, she asked me when they expect, and I told her. She arranged a doctor in a room in the hospital, the Bethesda Hospital, and she says, anytime you feel like baby's coming, call him up and go down there, she says. Yeah, I live on 90 Stanford, and right in the back was the Bethesda Hospital. So I arranged a woman to take my kids over to the house when I go to the hospital. And I told Sam and I told Scotty to take care of the place. And I got sick during the night. And instead of calling anybody, I walked out and walked down to the Bethesda Hospital. Mm-hmm. There was a block down, and had a block this way and this way, a block. And I tried to get in, and I didn't know they locked the doors in a hospital. Like at the hospital, the doors are open nights. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. The doors was closed. It was dark. I didn't see any bell. So I walked down to 7th Street, and I saw a policeman on the corner. And I told him, I got a doctor in the room arranged in the Bethesda Hospital, and I can't get in there. And I told him I'm expecting. So he called up from there, and the nurse told him to come right over to me, and she'd be by the door. And she was. He rang the bell. She told him where the night bell was.
No.
He rang the night bell, and they took me in, and took me down there, and then they called the doctor. And in the morning, from the hospital, they tried to call my house to notify my husband. They tried to call from there, but Scotty was trying to call the hospital. And they finally find out that the baby was born, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning. And so he was in Montana. Didn't send the money to live out, nothing. So they was going to bring him back, and he was working on the Great Town Northern under a different name.
Yeah.
He had a different name there when he was working. He had a different name there. So finally, when they wrote to him, I don't remember who wrote to him, I guess the attorney wrote him. And so he came back. But when I had to get out from the hospital, I had wonderful care. And that was the best care I ever in that Bethesda hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They took care of me so good and took care of the baby. Then when I had to go home, they called my home. They should come and take me. So it was Scotty and Sam that came to take me home. And the noise when there's no bitch on the farm. So they took me home, and I felt pretty good. Well, I was about a week, I guess. So then I was home, and afterwards he came back. He came back, and it was the same thing over again. He don't bring no money in, and the landlord got a job for him in the Great Northern. He was still working on that job, but he don't bring any money in.
And you'd feed him?
No, yeah, he just can't eat. But he don't put the bird down there in the money into the house.
Huh.
So there I, afterwards I start suing him for divorce. And I got a lawyer, he was a very poor lawyer. He was supposed to pay me $35 a month, the lawyer. The lawyer took that money and used it by some benefit, and I didn't get nothing. Well, he had to have the money for his fee. I didn't have the money to pay. So then he arranged John McMicken and Swan. He had two lawyers to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And my lawyer was such a poor lawyer, so I asked him. So when I came to see the lawyer, he says, well, Bagan says it's going to be good. You better take him back. So I said, huh? Did I have to come to you for that advice? I said, When I kicked him out, I said, I don't want him back. So he said, well, he couldn't even be able to do much, so I had to get another lawyer. So to pay him up, Levy, whatever his name is, I had to pay him up before I can take the papers out of it. And then I had another lawyer, I was right next door to him, because I didn't know anybody, I was just a stranger here. And I got the other lawyer, and you know, I used to work so hard that off and on I used to get sick with such a terrible migraine headache. And I was laying in bed with such a terrible headache, and my baby's on the floor, nobody there even to give me something to eat. Nobody even to give me a drink of water. I was so sick and I couldn't stand any least little bit of noise, I'd just jump.
Mm-hmm.
And for 24 hours, I couldn't keep a little water in my stomach. And he's sitting in the pool hall and taking care of himself there. So we had a doctor, Dr. Aldous, and Scotty called Dr. Aldous and he came. Mind you, Scotty, a stranger, used to pick up the baby from the floor and wash him up and put him in the high chair and cook for him a little cereal and feed the babies. And the father was sitting in the pool hall. So when I was suing him for divorce, he had a doctor, a witness for him against me. Well, I did get divorced, but it was 6 months later that he sued me for the children. And you know, he kept a housekeeper there. And see, though, it was Dr. I don't remember that judge's name, but she, they was all Catholics, and these workers was all Catholics. And they wanted to take my kids away and make Catholics out of them. So the every time I tried to get my kids back, they was against me. And he had a housekeeper, and my little girl was suffering.
Oh, he got the kids?
He took the kids away.
Oh, my God.
And the doctor, my doctor, was a witness for him against me. And he's a Jewish doctor. But the lady in the back there, upstairs on 4th Street, where I was living, 250 West 5th Street, he came together for a witness. See, when I went to work, and I took my little baby son out of the day nursery, he take the babies out, and he was living across the street from me, 250 West 5th Street. I was living 250 West 5th Street, and this was 251, I guess. And he took the two babies out, and there was cars in the back, and they was playing out of the cars. And they got himself all dirty and greasy. Then he taken down, Judge Orr was the name, yeah, Judge Orr. I take him down to Judge Orr and showed him the way I keep my babies. And I had my babies in a day nursery. And the two other kids, you know, went to school. I was up 5 in the morning, and I used to sit at night and make clothes for them. Because he took the babies out of his house.
He just took his baby. He just took his two.
He took the two kids, the other kids from school,
uh-huh.
And took their clothes off, and then he sent them back without clothes. And I used to go to Goodwill Industry up there and buy old clothes, and sit at night and make clothes for them. Otherwise, my kids didn't have no clothes. He didn't buy nothing for them. And he used to take him all the time to the house. I take him down to the day nursery, and he come and take him to the day nursery, and kept him there and got him dirty, and take him out to the judge and show the judge how dirty I keep my babies. And then he was so crooked. He hurt his arm. He was supposed to pay me $35 a month. I never saw one red cent from him. And he had his arm hung up. He hurt his arm. And so when I come to the judge and I told him, I don't get any money. I'm getting the money for food for the kids. Well, he says, when a man is injured, I can't make him pay any money. He was getting money from the Great Northern. I wasn't getting nothing. And yet, but you see, he's so crooked. He must have did it on purpose. He heard his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his arm hung up. and he couldn't pay me nothing. So for all the time, I never get a red cent. I was supposed to get $35 a month. I never get a red cent. And I had to support the kids from the Truman Gazette. So I was working in the Miller Hospital. $35 a month, and took the kids over a day nursery, and the two other kids went to school. So then when he come to, and these workers there, you know, was working for him, working against me, so they got my kids away from me. So he had my two children, he had my two kids. And I tried, and they was always against me, couldn't get kids back. And, I did get a washing, but then after, it was 6 months later when I got my kids. After I got my kids, letters was coming to him, and I couldn't read them, and I took them down to the International Institute to translate the letters. And he's got a wife in Turkey.
Oh.
I had to take out my last cent from the bank, $75, and pay to that lawyer, otherwise he wouldn't do nothing to get my divorce from him, do nothing for me. And when it came to the kids, I didn't have any more money. And he had a wife in Turkey. I sent for the papers where he registered for the war. I sent for all them, you know. And in the letters, they translated the letters for me. Then after the guy had translated the letters for me, Anthony told him about it. That he translated the letters. See, the Armenian people, they stick together.
Mm-hmm.
He's Armenian. And they told him about it, and then he knew that I knew. So, and this Mrs. Baker, where he was rooming. Now, she knew my circumstances, and she knew my trouble, and she claimed my friend to be my friend. And he was rooming there, and she had a girl, she was insane, up on the third floor. And he brought a drill down and had it in his room. And then he asked Mr. Babel that she give him that venereal disease, what doctor he should go to. So Mrs. Babel knew about it. And he was stealing my children and had it in his room with in his bed with my little babies. And this Mrs. Babel got her roller and pound herself in the floor, and she didn't tell me nothing. She goes to church all the time, and she didn't tell me nothing. And she knew all that. And I didn't even need no divorce, because he's got a wife. I didn't have to take all my pennies out from there, and I had to feed buy wood for my food for my children. I had to buy food for my children. I took out the last cent and I gave it to the lawyer to get my divorce. And she knew about it, and I didn't need it. I didn't need a lawyer. And she is my best friend. And she goes and pounds her head in the wall with the roller going to church all the time. And she knew all about it and didn't tell me nothing. And after it was all over, she had to take my kitchen. And she was Catholic. And there was monks around there, so they sent the kids to the Catholics.
Oh.
They sent to Sunday school. He made Catholics out of my two kids. And then after I came to see them in school, Bella used to come to visit him there. Then he used to sit with Marie across, I used to sit down with the children there across on the damp, but he sat down in the chair. And I had Marie in his lap. And Marie was wearing transparent pajamas, you could see everything through. And he was sitting right across and laughing and giggling. You know. And the kids was not supposed to talk anything. They was not supposed to say a word to me. Mm-hmm. I will ask him things and they will never say a word. They are scared of him. They're scared of him. They're not supposed to say nothing. And then when they got a little bigger, I came to see him in the school. Then, you know, when there was trouble there, and I was not trying to take the pictures, and he was going to break up my camera. And he made a housekeeper there, so then they made an arrangement I should see the kids in the courthouse. And they used to bring them down to the courthouse, and I see the kids there. And they just kept mum, they wouldn't say a word. I can talk and talk and ask her, and they wouldn't say nothing. So the boy, he's good Catholic, the daughter isn't, and but after she got bigger and she went to work. She left him there with his housekeeper. And she went to work and she was working with her family. And there was a girl there that I knew. And she told her about me. She said that you ought to see your mother. You know, because I went to see her in this high school, Mechanic Arts High School, and she wouldn't talk to me. And then I asked the teacher, I asked the principal. I told her about it and she talked to her and she said she didn't want to bother with me. So then that girl, well, you know, it was poisoning out the children so much.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, everything that that guy did, he said that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, the kids were so small, and he said, he told the kids that he saw me in bed with another man. And when the housekeeper told him that even if it's true, you cannot tell it to your little children, because it doesn't work out good for your little babies. Even if it's true, you shouldn't say that. He fired that woman right away. If a decent woman, he wouldn't keep her. Mm-hmm. And if had a woman that he could, you know, monkey business with her, then he kept her. Mm-hmm. So Marie, she was with him, and she was telling them all the lies, so he kept her. So the boy, he's still, now he's married, and he's living by himself there. And he don't want to have nothing to do with us. And,
what, did he live here?
He lives in St. Paul.
Uh-huh. Is that the socialist paper?
No. This
Carl?
Was Zionist paper.
Oh, Zionist.
So this paper made me a Zionist. So I belong to a Zionist organization, and I paid my dues, and then during the war, when the World War was on, then they told the Jewish boys to go fight for the country, go fight for Israel, and they were brought in the army, you fight Canada, go fight Taliban. So they send me petitions to go and get signatures to get the Jews should get Palestine. So they say, so after I came home from work, I used to cover the petitions, go around to get signatures, so the Jews should get Palestine. So I came into one place there in our office, and there was judges and lawyers there, a whole bunch of them sitting there. I showed them the petition, and I said, I'd like to get your signatures. And they was reading the heading, and then they say, boys, let's sign the petition. If the Jews say you're going to get Palestine, you're going to come together in the United States. So they all signed it. I went around, I filled up the petitions, and I sent it away. But afterwards, they raised the Jews. And some things I find out I didn't like what they do. And that paper was gone, and I came back to St. Paul, and Sam Wolf moved into my place. He had a room there, and then Monk Fight came out. So Sam bought for me the first subscription for the Fight. And then I was reading the Fight, and then I tried to send it along to that Yiddish school they had in the labor license. I didn't have the money to pay them. They finally used to not pretty good, you know, or Jewish, and I didn't have the money to pay them, and then I fell on the two, and it wasn't any money. So I was really the morning fighting that.
Was this Sam Wolf a communist, or what was he?
I used to belong to all the left wing organization when I was here.
He's still alive?
Oh yeah, he's on the flight, his daughter got me out of the Chicago once. I called him up and he came to see me, and he used to say, let somebody else get married and he's gonna have a wife. He didn't want to get married. And but he's married and he got $1, and I saw on the flight his daughter got me out. But she's such a spoiled that. And his wife has got that Kupangapa, and sometime in winter time she got some friends that fall. So when I was to get in Chicago, and then after he came over and got me his car, he's still in business.
Yeah.
And my daughter, she had a grocery store. She worked so hard, and two little babies, she had a grocery store. She wanted to be independent. So I can run to the grocery store, and the Jewish woman was like, boy. And I start talking to this little boy, Jewish. So she came over, and she went to me, and she was back upstairs. So, then in the evening, I said, I'd like to know now, I said, what's wrong with it? There's so much anti-Semitism here, or what's happening? You don't want me, you don't want to find out, you don't want to find out that you're Jewish? So she says, no. So I just didn't like it, and I just said the next time.